Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with another episode of Bum 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 Bum. The people are blunt. As you can see, I have someone with me today. And I really want to get started on this conversation, but let me do a little bit of housekeeping. So you already know, but I'm gonna keep saying it. We're on all the plats: YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Prime. Like, subscribe, do all of the good things to let us know that you are out there. Y'all know that I actually comments and reply to them. So please make sure that you tap in. Let me know if you like what you're seeing and what you want to see more of. And then also, the people are blunt. We also have an IG page. So holla at me. You all have been making me so happy by responding to the reels, liking them, resharing them. That is exactly what I want to see. And so thank you in advance. I appreciate you. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest today, Guillermo Rodriguez. How are you?
I am good, Frederica. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to the chatting with you and see what we get into.
So, thank you for being here. So, first and foremost, your team reached out, and I have to say that I was very intrigued because you are a virtual CFO. Is that correct?
Yep, virtual CFO.
Yeah. So when I think of C, like when I think of the C-suite specifically, I think of something that is kind of in-house, right? And just stagnant, if you will, like the C-suite are with that company. And so when I was doing my research and reading up, the fact that you are virtual, the fact that I know you have multiple clients was very interesting. So I want to tap into quickly, how did you come into like this creative kind of niche? And how do you deal with that, that kind of I guess the challenge of having multiple clients, like not just focusing primarily on one business?
Yeah, first I'll give you a little bit of my story and then get into, what's really different about this. 'Cause to your point, being an in-house CFO or working in corporate, very much different. I mean, doesn't matter how smart you are, how much you know, it's a whole different world than when you're dealing with multiple clients. So it's a huge shift from someone going in from a corporate environment in the C-suite to work in a client-facing role as a virtual CFO. But my story started, at least professionally, right after college. I graduated way back in 2003 with an accounting degree. I thought I was going to become a CPA, which I did. I took the exam that year. I was pretty excited, got my first job. I just want to have enough money to pay for my car and my apartment and be independent. And I was happy with that. And
As most
so,
of us did, right?
yeah, that's right. And so, as I progressed, my goals changed. But a couple years into my first job, I was working in a government job. I said, I really want to learn what I thought a CPA was and what I thought the profession was all about, which is doing historical financial statements, right? Taking the company's books, issuing the financial statements, me maybe being that person that coordinates the financial audit, and maybe even doing taxes. So I did all that. I worked in internal audit. I went into the corporate world with a construction company here based out of San Antonio, and a really large company, 20,000 employees, 3 to 4 billion in revenue. So really large corporate environment, but still a private company. So I got all that experience because I got to move around a lot. I worked in, like I said, audit, financial accounting. That's where you're just the accounting manager and you're reporting the books from a historical basis, right? You put the books together and then you're saying what happened. That's basically financial reporting and just making sure that everything is correct, all the accounts are reconciled. Halfway through my career there, we started making some acquisitions and growing. And what we needed to do was create a financial statement forecast to get the deal approved. And so that was my segue into corporate finance. I also took on a project of forecasting financial statements internally to be able to make sure that we were in compliance with our debt covenants because we had big lines of credit with a consortium of banks. So all that really shifted me from being that like historical accountant to now I was working with the accountants, getting the numbers so I could look forward for multiple purposes. And those purposes were We need to make an acquisition and get that approved. We wanted to look at our cash flow for the next year, depending on how much, which jobs we were going to take on, to make sure we had enough cash, just different strategic purposes where we had to look into the future. And so that is really the, that was really the shift. It wasn't a virtual CFO yet, but that was a shift going from historical accountant to forward looking corporate finance, what more of what a virtual CFO does, strategy.
Yeah. You mentioned forecast a couple of times, and this is something I wanted to ask you about, because cannabis specifically is so volatile, if you will. I mean, every time you turn around, there's some new compliance, there's some change. Right now, you know, we're in the midst of public comment period ending for the possibility of rescheduling, right? Like the DEA public comment period. And so in regards to forecast, how are you, I guess, kind of projecting, forecasting, looking if we actually, or I'll claim it and say when we get this reschedule. Caveat, we know that we ultimately want descheduling. But look, we're hoping for this incremental step to keep moving the industry forward. So, you know, based on how you're forecasting right now and what the possibility is with rescheduling, you know, how are you talking to clients about that? How are you kind of shifting your look on things?
Yeah, first I'll say that, you know, with regards to the comment period, I think you probably saw the statistic too, that we had like a 92% of those comments for rescheduling or descheduling. So from the perspective of other reclassifying of controlled substances, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. So it's extremely positive. It's nonpartisan. I know very staunch Trump supporters that support cannabis. So it's really not a political thing. It's just, so hopefully my point there is that regardless of what happens in the election, hopefully it gets done before, you know, that's the best scenario. But if not, hopefully I think there's still enough support where it just can't be ignored. How forecast changes with the reschedule. First of all, I would say it needs to change for cannabis, regardless of the reschedule. I think what you mentioned earlier about compliance, I think what compliance, regulation, and the burden of 280E has really, what it's done to operators is that it hasn't allowed them to focus on what really, not on what really matters, but it just hasn't given them the time to really forecast, to look at metrics, to be more forward looking, because everyone is just kind of in survival mode. And then there's not the cash available to get the help because the taxes are so high. So I think there, that's the first part that will change. I think with the reschedule, possible reschedule, 280E going away, and there just being more cash just because of the tax situation, I think operators are going to have more available cash to spend on professional services and will get the help they need to be able to put a forecast together and really set metrics and goals that they need to achieve week by week to be able to get to the profit numbers that they need and the goals that they set. So I think that is going to be the main change. The other part of it is that, well, I'll give you a story. Like I get calls from, when we have prospect calls with new operators, especially like in the New Jersey market. That's the first question I ask is like, what do you think your revenue is going to be? And the answer is always they're familiar with other retail locations and how much revenue those retail locations are doing, but the operators haven't broken down. What's my cost going to be? How many people do I need to hire? What does my utilization need to be? All these different metrics. What does my average transaction size need to be? And how to even monitor those things to then come back, going back to historical, to be able to say, we didn't hit our numbers. This is why. And then these are the actions that we're going to take to help improve our profitability, whether it's, you know, different product assortment, new discount strategy, or just flat out making sure that your discount strategy isn't, you know, over discounting, you know, just to give a few examples. And so that's how I think forecasting is really going to change, is that now operators are really going to get the help they need. And it's, I just want to make the point that this is really, as a virtual CFO, my goal is to empower the client for to help clients start thinking for themselves financially. So it has a lot to do with education and working together in a relationship to be able to drive better financial results.
Yeah, I think that that's so important, right? What you were saying in terms of knowing your customer, knowing your client base, right? And how to engage with them. Are the discounts that you're providing actually bringing the benefit? You know, is the cause and effect? Is it actually reaching who it needs to reach? Are you doing it unnecessarily, right? Like, are you discounting when, you know, you actually shouldn't be? And, you know, how are you, I think that it always goes back and forth between how are you getting new clients or reaching new demographics versus how are you keeping your existing ones, keeping them happy and or, you know, expanding or increasing what they're buying, you know, like that purse, you know what I'm saying? Like if they're usually per transaction spending 100, can we get them to spend 125? Can we get them to spend 150? You know, like how does that look?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just anecdotally, I can't tell you how many times I've been into a dispensary and just because of the design and the regulations, you know, nobody really approaches me or really tries to upsell. So I think there's still a lot of opportunity to just not make the space, intimidating and to really capture that new consumer and start to dig into the illicit market over time. Yeah. But yeah, to your point, I mean, the average operator is not tracking those customer demographics. That's the piece of our metrics that we call pipeline. And that is really looking into the future, determining what is that retention? How do I go grab back these customers, right? And makes me really happy when I talk to new operators. They're like, yeah, we're getting set up. We got our license. We got a real estate space. And I'm thinking about using a retail a POS optimization tool that will help me see those metrics. I'm like, great. You know, that is money well spent. Start to do that from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And you will be much more profitable because you're empowered with data that you can act on and you can make decisions whether maybe there's a category that's just not performing and to move things around to make better profits.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like why? Why is that category not performing? Because, you know, you have some people, depending on the market, who are OG, right? And so, like, in their mind, it's flower. That's it, right? But, you know, maybe they're actually intimidated by some of the other ways to consume. You know, maybe they're not as familiar. And so, of course, you know, you stick with what you know. I want to go into this because you were talking about prospective clients. And you also gave us a little bit of your backstory coming out of corporate, dealing with a company that has 20,000, you know, and now coming into this space. So give us kind of like an overview of, you know, like a snapshot of what your clients, like your current clients, what do they look like in terms of, you know, how many, you know, the staff, the size, the scope, you know, that kind of thing. And then how do you actually decide on what clients you accept or who do you take on?
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's the piece I didn't get to in my story, but right around the pandemic is when I, you know, left corporate. I said that was a great time. And I went into consulting and then eventually joined Anders to lead up the vertical in our cannabis practice. And one of the most important things about being a virtual CFO is that you are in that particular industry, right? Nothing wrong with being a generalist and being in different industries, but get to be much more effective when you in cannabis or you're in legal or the majority of your clients are in one particular market segment.
So you're like a specialist now because you're doing that every day, all day. So you're really in tune.
Yeah. You're immersed in that industry. And you also love it. And you have reasons that, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're passionate about what you do. You know, that was really neat that I got to do that in my career, really just choose where I wanted to be. But most companies, you know, whether, cause you're asking, you know, kind of what size, and that's a really great question because once companies get to 30, 40 million, they are really ready to have a full-time virtual CFO. It doesn't mean that we sometimes don't supplement with our services, but that's really when you need someone full-time. So when I left corporate, I was learning all these different things, risk management, treasury, finance, accounting, audit. And I was like, small businesses need all of this. They certainly can't afford all the people it takes to do this. In corporate, you have a person doing all of these. So why not combine it into a service that you can do fractionally for multiple clients so that small businesses, which not just in cannabis, but just overall, are underserved and they're not profitable unnecessarily, right? Because they don't have the financial guidance. And so, but I really wanted to do it in the right way, which meant that I wanted to package these services and I wanted to have set pricing for the services. Cause I think that's really important for the client, particularly in cannabis. As far as I know, I don't see any other firms doing this, but where, like, let's just say you open a dispensary and you start to look around and you're like, okay, I need someone to do my books. I want to do my business taxes, but not my personal taxes. And I also want to know how to set my goals and set metrics to be more profitable. Really, I need the advisor, okay? What we do is we get on a call with the prospective client and we talk through, you know, where are you at right now, and determine what the needs are. And then there's set pricing for all the different services, right? And so in that sense, a company that is maybe startup but has the funding all the way to 20 million is really the size companies, maybe 20 to 25 employees, sometimes more. That's really the sweet spot where a business owner will want to hire a virtual CFO and all the different services that come along with it. And then it's very flexible. Sometimes, you know, you may want to take away a service because you really want someone to do it in-house. Well, we can do that. And we can change those services in and out. And so we're here to stay. It provides a lot of stability for the client because, you know, we're not going anywhere, but clients have a lot of turnover in accounting, right? Small businesses does, you know, but so we can really help through those changes and supplement more if there's any kind of staff changes. But our services and what we do for clients really is the advisory. That's the goal setting. That's the telling the story of your financials. And we meet monthly, three times or more as needed. But one meeting is to talk about the financial statements. What happened? What could we do better? We want to get into production metrics. That's the sales metrics, basket size, you know, how are we performing at the production level? And then a third meeting is what you mentioned earlier, talking about customers. How are we doing there? What do we need to do to bring in new customers or recapture customers that we lost, right? And then the last piece is tax. And so many clients will want us to do their taxes, maybe the personal or the business or a combination of two. So we add the tax, and that way we're planning monthly and really, you know, what's going to happen from a tax standpoint. And that's very different than working with just a tax accountant or a CPA that's just doing your taxes and your meeting about once a year, right? So we're really trying to help our clients with the forecasting piece determine what their tax liability is going to be, so there's no surprises and we're setting that money aside for them.
Yeah. I like the opportunity to have a la carte, if you will, right? Yeah. Because when I'm thinking of our small minority women led businesses who are really out here bootstrapping it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know we're dealing with 280E, but we're also dealing with very limited funds. Funds have been drying up, you know, in terms of VC, angel investors. We're still dealing in a space where we don't have access to traditional banking. And so, you know, really people are often in a position, small business owners are in a position where they are really trying to decide between two things. You know, do I really need this? Do I need it now? And trying to be very frugal and, you know, and just keepers of that coin, right? Trying to stretch a dollar. So I like the fact that you're having conversations, you're actually kind of being able to customize, like, hey, this is where you are. And these are the things that are going to help you to make the most of it. and to you know, hopefully not getting any trouble, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To make sure that you are compliant. You mentioned passion. And so like, as I was doing my research on you, I came across a story where you were talking about, so full disclosure, Guillermo and I both are in Texas, are in the state of Texas. We know that there's a very limited, I'll say, medical program in existence. Mm-hmm. I'll get your thoughts on how you think Texas is going to progress in this road of regulating. But anyway, you mentioned, I came across a story where you mentioned, you know, actually visiting, you know, our some of these prisons, some of these, you know, penitentiaries where people are, you know, are housed right now. People are serving time for this plant that other people are making money off of. I wanted you to, because this is really important, and you know, with our brand, we're all about equity, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we're all about, you know, justice. And so I thought it was great that you kind of took that initiative through other programs, but being able to have that kind of one-on-one engagement. And so just kind of talk about that experience and talk about, you know, if any change internally that it had on you. Because we know the PR campaign. I would say like the War on Drugs was probably the best PR campaign ever in terms of, you know, this is your brain on drugs, in terms of the DARE program, mm-hmm. Especially being in Texas. Texas is, you know, hella conservative. You being of what, Latinx, Mexican descent, right? Mexican. So we know that they mm-hmm. like, oh no, you don't do that. You know, you don't smoke that. Don't be involved in it. And so I really just want to kind of get, you know, in terms of your passion, how these things fit together.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really, when I hear people talk about being tough on crime and these different things and having opinions about it or how you approach it or who you vote for, I want to say it, spend some time in a prison facility, join a program, meet with people who are incarcerated, sit down and hear their story. However you feel, you're going to change your perspective after that. And I've been part of two restorative justice program. One was Bridges to Life, and another one was through the Catholic Church, Colby Ministries, where we put on a retreat for the incarcerated men in the prison. And, you know, to me, just hearing the stories, hearing the transformation that was going on, it just hit me that our criminal justice system is just so punitive. Not only, you know, we can get into justice, which is the fairness of how it's applied to different groups, but just the way we don't approach it from a more restorative standpoint, meaning that we're hurting people, we're hurting families, we're taking fathers away for crimes that don't need, you know, such punitive sentences. And so not to mention that the laws themselves aren't applied fairly, and that of justice is a fairness of how those laws applied. So it's really clear that someone who can afford a jury trial is not going to take one, and is going to choose a lighter sentence. And so all of this is going on, but I just want to say, like, after I heard these stories and met with the men, it just changed my perspective. I'm like, we have to move towards a more restorative criminal justice system where we can help people not ruin lives and help rehabilitate people rather than punish people for years and years and years and punish their families, right? So that's how it's changed me. And on top of it, we're not only are the laws not applied fairly, but they should have never been criminal offenses to begin with. So on top of that, you're also criminalizing people and taking them away from their fathers, away from their children, for crimes that are now legal, right? And so we got to recognize that and also, you know, change things, especially here in Texas.
Thank you for sharing that. Especially here in Texas. You know, I guess let's get it on the record now. Like, what is your prediction for Texas? So I'll share. Me personally, I feel like Texas is probably going to be the last state to fully regulate. I feel like, you know, it'll probably happen at the federal level where they're like, hey, we're descheduling. And Texas will still be like, nope, we are separate. We're going to do it our way down here. And, you know, we still not ready. But, you know, I think about that because I'm like, oh, this is the only state that's not on the national grid. And, you know, I mean, like Texas has that history of being like, we're in the U.S., but we're kind of separate. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, what's your thought on that?
I saw a cap the other day that said, make Texas a country again. And that's really the attitude. But look, I think, and I'm sure you know, obviously you saw the news from the lieutenant governor and trying to crack down and possibly make what are called intoxicating hemp products illegal, right? I learned on another podcast, they're not toxic, so we should stop using that word because they're not technically toxic to the body, right? It could be if they include other substances. But look, I feel that it is a big industry in Texas and that we are about business in Texas and doing things big, as cliche as it is. Like, we really do value big business and doing things right in Texas. And our Secretary of Agriculture is a strong supporter of the hemp industry, mainly for hempcrete and feed and other things. But regardless, it has created a lot of jobs. It is a big industry. You have institutions like Texas A&M behind it and doing the research. And I think everything sadly comes down to politics. And it is such a big industry here. With law support that it could impact people. And that's why I think that our hemp industry will continue to move forward. My prediction is that Texas will be the strongest hemp industry in the country, just because we have so much support and the right brains behind it. And so I think we'll stand out that way. To me, I think Texas in a way too has been like, we're not dealing with this 280E stuff, right? And so we're not gonna create businesses here that, you know, basically can't make a profit. So yes, when 280E goes away, I think the reschedule, it's got to force a conversation in Texas about rescheduling here in Texas. And yeah, even though Texas wants to be different, I do think that to some degree, we got to be on par with at least the federal. We can't be behind the federal. So I think it's, if anything, it's going to really force those conversations. But as you know, progress in Texas is really slow because the lieutenant governor has so much power and they only meet every 2 years to do anything. So needs to be every year. I don't know. It's an old law, but I think that has a lot to do with it. So things can just get killed so easily just because of the structure that we have here in Texas. So I think it's going to take something political to get things moving forward.
Yeah, I would say, you know, as always, I'm not telling people who to vote for, but I would say voting is so important, and especially down ballot. You know, a lot of times, you know, especially when it's a presidential election year, you know, people come out and they vote. But it's really those off years, and it's those other, you know, those other positions that don't have the same kind of budgets attached to them, and don't really get the same kind of shine, if you will. But they're so important. To your point, like the lieutenant governor. But just people need to be aware of that. Like, they need to be aware of like how things actually get done in their state. And see how they can impact and affect change. So, look, we're running up on time, but I have one more question that I really wanted to get into. So, again, in doing my research, I came across something you were talking about, you know, KPIs and customer acquisition costs and things of that nature. In my mind, everyone who gets into business ultimately decides, or they come into a point where they're thinking about how to scale or how to sell. Like, that to me, those are the two things, right? And especially when we're talking about equity programs across the state with cannabis, there are a lot of limitations put on license holders in terms of when they can sell, or who they can sell to, and how they can scale. And so just wanted to kind of get your take and how you advise around this, or how you, you know, kind of help clients to position themselves in the best way for either of those, or even decide between, you know, between the two, you know?
I think it all really comes down to putting things down on paper, really getting into the details of how you're going to forecast out your business, because you mentioned scaling and it's not just a buzzword. It really means that as your business grows, the cost that you have to run your business, your rent and your people generally stays the same. So your profit can go up exponentially. And that's what we mean by scaling. And so the first piece is to be able to predict sales accurately. That has to do with understanding your customers and retention, and then really understanding that overhead cost structure, right? At what point do I need to have a separate location? At what point do I need to hire, you know, one more butt tender or a delivery person or whatever? And so really understanding the cost of all your people, your rent, your marketing expense is really the key in that. And so, you know, even if you can follow some ground rules on, you know, where your overhead structure should be based on how much you're selling is a good starting point. But I think that is the scary part of scaling, is that as you're opening another location or growing, you have a high cost until you're able to really start making a profit, right? Because sales don't, you know, take off right off day one. So that's really what we help clients do. And that's something that you can do even without a virtual CFO, is really understanding your costs. Yeah. And really have that certainty of like, I know I'm going to need this much cash until this day. And that really helps put things, because, yeah, you know, a lot of times we're just worried about cash, But when you put those numbers down, it really puts you at ease. And then it allows you to be proactive, like, okay, how much money do I need to raise? You know, how am I going to pay down debt? Do I need to go out and get some more capital, and how can I do it? So that way you have some real answers before you go out and make decisions, and you also can sleep at night better.
Yeah. Taking some of the guessing and estimating out of it, right? Like really using hard data points, you know? Although I would say, I think COVID is something that no one predicted, right? Like no one predicted, you know, how that was going to impact business. No one predicted, you know, us just having a global pandemic in and of itself. But to your point, like data matters. And that makes my labor heart, like my background is in labor and organizing. And so that just makes me happy. It's like, look, we got to get to the data points there. So, time has went by so quickly, but let me just say this, and I want to go to you, Guillermo, for last words. Good people, please follow Guillermo on LinkedIn by name. That's Guillermo Rodriguez on LinkedIn. He is also on IG, known as The Cash Flow Coach. So that is The_CashFlow_Coach. I'm gonna put it right back down here one more again so y'all can see that. He answers his DMs, so go ahead and slide into those if you are interested in being a potential client. And maybe if you have just like a quick Q&A, but like y'all don't flood, and you know what I mean? Because like, look, we're all out here, you know, trying to make a living and things of that nature, and so we want to be good stewards of people being willing to share information, to share their knowledge. But before we get out of here, I want to go to you for parting words.
Yeah, I mean, to your final thoughts and being good stewards and sharing information is that, yeah, we absolutely need to help each other, share information, how we can get better, how we can get more profitable. And I think that's really how we're going to be successful as an industry when the amended tax return news with Trulieve, all this came out. We did a webinar because that we do need to be sharing the tax strategies and what's being done. And so I would share that with the listeners, is like, look, we have a webinar on that. There's a lot of questions in the industry on the current tax situation with the amended returns. Mm-hmm. And I also have a podcast, and we are just sharing what's helping operators be successful, right? How to choose service professionals and what to look out for to make sure that you're working with trusted people. So check that out. I do think that, you know, my final thought is that we just have such a great industry. Everyone who's here is here for a purpose, whether it's health, whether it's promoting small business and minorities thriving in this industry. And I think the reschedule is going to be tremendous, or at least we can say it's already successful because it's been accepted up to a certain point. And we have 92% of Americans supporting this. So we are really in a good place. It's been a long time, but I think we're finally getting to that breaking point to really thrive as an industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Guillermo, again, thank you so much for coming on the People Are Blunt and sharing of yourself, your passion, your knowledge. Hey, good people, it's very important for you to and always follow the money and pay attention to your money. Because at the end of the day, that is going to help you go from striving and barely making it to thriving, right? Again, the goal is getting to scale or sell. And in order to be able to do that, you got to know where your dollar's at.
Where you at,
right? Until next time, y'all already know what it is. The People Are Blunt. We'll holler back.